Coming up on Windows Weekly, live from Build 2017. Leo is out, but I am here. And of course, Mary Jo Foley and Paul Theroux are here with special guests, including Chris Prattley, Frank Shaw, Brad Sams, and an animated special guest you know and love called Clippy. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley, episode number 517, recorded Thursday, May 11th, 2017, live from Build 2017. Windows Weekly is brought to you by WordPress. WordPress powers 27% of all websites. Get 15% off your new website at wordpress.com/windows. That's wordpress.com/windows. And by Upside, the smart new way to save big money on business travel. Visit upside.com and enter the code Windows, and you are guaranteed at least a $100 gift card when you book your first trip. Welcome to Windows Weekly. Leo Laporte is out this week watching his young son graduate from college. I am Megan Maroney here, and I have Mary Jo Foley and Paul Theroux and their special guests today, because of course it's Microsoft Build, and their one of their special guests, Frank Shaw, CVP of Communications for Microsoft. And I am going to turn this one over to the experts who are there on the floor of Build and who obviously know a lot more about Windows than us. I do.
I'm looking for the experts. Where are we finding them?
We wanted to talk to Frank about some of the background behind Microsoft's event schedule, especially the first half of this year, because you guys have been kind of, you know, hitting one right after the other.
Right.
So thank you for all the travel. What kind of sits behind that? What's been going on lately with you guys?
So one of the things that's true about a company like Microsoft is we're such a big company and we reach so many different audiences that it's kind of insane to try to think about hitting everybody at the same time. And so we try to look at who the most important audiences are, and then we stage out a set of events over the course of a year. And so, you know, a lot of times we'll start off, this is our developer event, this is a big one for us. But then we also have a partner event called Inspire, which will be in DC this year. And then we have our big IT Pro event, which is called Ignite down in Florida. And then in addition to that, we have a bunch of product announcements and customer news that we try to make. And so over the last couple of weeks, you know, what we did is we started off and we had a bunch of news with Dynamics and LinkedIn, where we showed how those things were linked together. And we actually did that right before an event where our customers came out and talked about how they were using our products. And then we had earnings. And so we sort of look at that as just this opportunity to, you know, have coherent storytelling across a set of things that businesses and commercial audiences and financial audiences care about. And then we were in New York for the Windows 10 event, and we were there because there's a ton of media there. And anytime we have new hardware, we really want to make it easy for as many people as possible to see it. And because there's an education focus, again, New York is a great place for people to come to, and we had a chance to do really good work there. And then, of course, here in Seattle, it's our hometown, Cloud sure. City. You know, the Economist has a piece up today that that looks at the combined power of Silicon Valley and Seattle, the Puget Sound area, and right. They basically suggested that we should secede and form our own country. So, I'm mostly in favor of this.
Nice. So, being on the East Coast as I am, I appreciate all the East Coast events. But coming out here is great too. And actually, thank you for being in Seattle this year for Build and not in San Francisco, which has been the case for the past three, maybe 4 years or so.
Yeah, I think it's 3 years we've been down in San Francisco, and then we were in Seattle before that, and then we were in Orange County down in L.A. Before that. Right. So we've moved it around, yep. But we'll be in Seattle for a while now.
Nice. Yeah, that's great to come back here. I hadn't realized how much the city had kind of grown up in my absence. We mentioned earlier the possibility of a child coming in behind the camera.
I eagerly await what's going to happen here.
Well, all you have to do is look to your side.
Oh, it's Clippy. I love it.
Oh, my God.
Here, I'm just going to... Is Clippy going to loom over me? I love it.
It's hard to describe the exact process we had to go through to get the Clippy costume, but suffice to say that Microsoft Archives was involved.
Yes, that is good to know. I mean,
Mr. Shaw, I see you're having trouble insulting Brad Sams. May I offer advice?
I'm relatively certain that I never have problems insulting Brad Sams. It comes naturally to me.
Let's just say it's been shaken up.
Okay, that's good. I'm ready for you now. Okay. I own many costumes.
Oh, brother. God, it's like 3 days of work for 5 minutes. Well, yeah, totally worth it.
That's good.
So looking ahead, I mean, you mentioned some of the stuff that's coming up, obviously, Inspire and Ignite. Inspire was the former partner conference, right?
Right.
And I know you have a product event of sorts in China in a couple of weeks, maybe 2 weeks
right.
from now. And I know you can't
yep.
speak to that, but at least I would imagine that the decision to have that in China is related to the way you make decisions about wherever you're going to have these kinds of things, that there's something about China that makes sense for this to be there or whatever.
Sure. And you know, it's a global marketplace, and China is an incredibly important market to us. And so
right.
you know, from a hardware standpoint, we go there for events like WinHack and meet with our partners who are just doing fascinating stuff. And it's such an important market. We look at it, we say, hey, we should be there for some of our product opportunities as well.
Right. So maybe we could talk a little bit about Build since we're here.
Great.
You know, we've sat through some pre-briefings, obviously, that you hosted, which was great. And then the actual events, you know, we had the keynotes and so forth. And I have to say, you know, for myself, the most interesting bit in some ways came very late yesterday. And I don't remember exactly the way you said it, but it was repeated again on stage where the essence of it is that in Microsoft's view, the platform wars are over. And that, you know, you sort of recognize that Windows is one of the devices that people will use on PCs typically, and that it can serve kind of a special role in that capacity, which I find to be very interesting and also very smart, by the way. I mean, can you speak to that a little bit? I mean, because this is kind of contrary to the way people think about companies competing and platforms competing
yeah.
and so forth.
Well, if you sort of think about the journey that we've been on as a company over the last set of years, one of the first things that happened when Satya became CEO is we went down and we had an event in the Bay Area where we talked about bringing Office to iOS, and you know that was seen as a you know big deal for a bunch of different reasons, but one of them was the sense of openness and willingness to really embrace cross-platform collaboration, and
right.
you know, that's continued you know, across you know a number of our different products. You see our apps show up everywhere. I mean, if you had said 5 years ago that the best way to read email on an iOS device that was hooked up to Gmail was an app from Microsoft, people would say you've lost your
yep.
mind. But that's arguably true today, you know, with Outlook
right.
on iOS and on Android. And so yesterday when Satya talked about this evolved worldview of sort of mobile first, cloud first, moving to intelligent edge and intelligent cloud, and as part of that, you know, the expansion of the Microsoft Graph to include devices, that was a pretty big signal that
yeah.
in this world, you know, Windows becomes a really core part of this new Microsoft. And what
right.
Terry and team really showed off today, you know, was openness and the sense that if you put the customer at the center and you say, hey, we live in a world where everybody has multiple devices and we have this belief that we can make all of those devices better for the user if one of them is running Windows. And that's what we showed today.
Yeah, I mean, actually, just the expansion of the Microsoft Graph to consumers in a way is itself
right.
a huge thing, right? And I think Microsoft Graph is something that might be a little confusing to people who probably haven't been paying attention that kind of technology yet. But basically what you're referring to is all the inputs you can get from different services and products and how those things can kind of provide just a deeper understanding of what a person is doing across all of their devices, right? Not just on a Windows PC.
Yeah, that's right. And you want to, you know, as we all move around the world, we move across devices, and there's some things that we just want to know. And some of them are relatively easy to take care of, like, okay, my calendar will probably move with me. But like notifications is a little bit harder. The idea of saying, hey, I've been working on this particular thing, now I want to pick it up exactly here, you know, is a little bit more difficult. And so there's real coding work that has to happen to make that pop, and that's what we started showing so that developers can work with that as well.
Plus it's cross-platform, right? I mean, so you know, Apple or Google are probably working on some little bits of this, but their workloads all kind of rely on you being in their space for all of it for the most part. And I think that's right. Fascinating. But are you back online?
I'm back. I'm back.
Yes, we have Mary Jo back with us.
So, Frank, I wanted to ask you a little more about this whole shift in strategy that you guys talked about today with the idea Windows will make all your devices better. And you just talked a little bit about it, but I kind of feel like it's Microsoft's way of coping with not having its own successful phone platform. Like, it's a way of saying, okay, we're not in the consumer phone space right now, but here's how we're going to play with the platforms that others have. I mean, do you think that's a fair assessment of that?
Yeah, I think for a while now we've been saying that we think about mobility, not just the mobility of the device, but the mobility of the experience across devices. And you know, that's a good way of saying it. And what we're really doing is sort of proving that out, is that, look, we have phones. You know, people use our phones. People use devices like Surfaces or OEMs. Ship a bunch of stuff that are arguably portable. They just might not make phone calls with them. And we want to make sure that across all the devices that people have, that they have a great experience with Microsoft. And you know, that's what we've done. Cortana is on all these devices. You can get notifications across all the devices. We have applications that run across all of them. And so we just want to make sure that the experience people have with Microsoft is great regardless of where they are. You know, if you're going to be a productivity company, and we say we are a productivity company, and, you know, you believe you want to help, you know, people and organizations around the world to achieve more, then you actually have to have your stuff within arm's reach of everybody on the planet. And, and that involves making sure that your stuff runs really well on all those different devices.
Yeah, actually, so you collectively, Microsoft, I mean, had a couple of different ways of saying it. But what it essentially breaks down to is being where the customer is, being where the developer is in this case.
Right.
And not forcing them to conform to whatever platform ambitions you might have had at one time. It's just, you know, we're going to meet the people where they are.
That's exactly right. And that was a big theme from Scott Guthrie yesterday. He talks about developers, meeting developers where they are, regardless of what they're doing, and then giving them the tools they need to be successful. And it's equally true as we think about devices that people might use.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
So what's next? We've gone like all over. We've been to New York. We've been here. Yep. Now some of you are going to China next. Right.
That's right. We've got an event in China, and then we've got E3, which is our big gaming show down in LA. And you sort of think about it. If you think about where we have, they say passion, where people like really passionately use our services. There's one around productivity, where we have just a ton of juice, and then the other one is around gaming. Where we have a lot of passionate gamers across both Xbox and increasingly Windows with Xbox Live. And Phil Spencer got a chance to present at the financial analyst briefing yesterday, which is another event we had yesterday, because why would we stop after one day of keynotes? And I have to say it was an absolute blast to see Phil step up in front of a bunch of financial analysts. The deal was he could come and speak, but he had to wear a collared shirt. Amy said,
did it still have an Xbox or game logo on it?
It did not, and he was not allowed to wear an Xbox logoed or gaming logoed shirt. And in return, he said, well, I have to at least play a gaming video. So he did, and it was just a lot of fun to have him talk about the momentum that we have in gaming, and especially around Xbox Live, and how that is fueling engagement with our fans.
Nice.
And then we have the partner show coming up.
Yes, Inspire in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And then we're down in Florida for Ignite mid-September. And you know, that'll coincide with the launch of Satya's book, which is called Hit Refresh.
Excellent.
We're going to be busy.
Yes, we are. Thank you for that, by the way. Anything else? I mean, I know we can't keep you too long.
I know Frank's teaching a coding class next.
Tell us more
about that.
Well, you know, as you two know, one of the things that always happens when we have any of these events, these technical events, there is a certain set of people who complain about coding on stage.
I find that amusing, by the way. You commented on that twice, and I thought, well, what do you expect? This is a developer show. I mean,
if anything,
there was too little coding. I mean, there used to be a lot of you know, handwriting of code right on stage, and that doesn't really happen as much anymore.
It's been limited a little bit because we have more breakout sessions. But I remember one year we were doing a build, and I was, as I always do, sort of like watching what the ink-stained wretches are doing on Twitter. And you know, people are like, oh, my God, they're coding on stage. You know, I've lost the will to live. I'm falling asleep. You know, please, God, end it now. I'm like, wait, this – I'm at a developer show. I mean, the developers are loving this. And so, you know, you just have to sort of forewarn people. Here it comes. And so, you know, we'll just do some simple stuff today to show actually how easy it is, you know, for journalists to connect data sources, run some queries, do some analysis. It should be pretty fun.
That's great.
Okay.
I'm disappointed you're not personally teaching it, but that's still pretty cool.
Yes. Well, I actually had this idea that I was going to bake bread for everybody too, and
right. You
know, I committed to that on Twitter. Maybe after one too many glasses of wine, and.
Right.
Reality intruded because it would have involved me being, you know, in a bakery yesterday. Mm-hmm.
And you were busy this week, were you?
It was just a little bit busy, and I decided that on the list of things that I could consider dropping off, that might be higher on the list than you know, some of the other things that I wanted to do.
Maybe at Inspire, maybe at Ignite.
I think next what I'm going to do is I'm just going to bring sourdough starter to people. It's a little bit easier.
A little gift bag.
And
good
luck getting through the airport with it. You know, this big foaming,
a bag of white powder.
Big foaming thing of a sourdough starter. It'll get you a lot of good attention at the next security thing you see.
Nice.
Okay, great. Right. Well, thanks for having me here.
Thank you.
It was fun to be here. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, we were, thank you, joking earlier that, you know, Frank is the guy who often calls us in the wee hours of the morning, and I lovingly refer to him as the mouth of Sauron, for what I assume are obvious reasons. So I don't know how we're going to handle the next guest. I don't think Chris is here yet.
I don't think he's here yet.
We could either have Brad come in, or we could just talk a little bit about what some of the stuff that's happened. You know, maybe that would be the easiest.
Yeah.
What has happened, Mary Jo? What are we doing here?
I'm not loving my headset. I want to switch my headset again.
Wow. So, well, she does that. I will discuss what's been going on. So I think the biggest thing that's happened at the show for me, because, of course, I focus on the client, and so we're going to completely skip over day one and all the cloud stuff until Mary Jo gets her headset back. Is the next version of Windows 10, which they've named and provided some information about. And so that release is going to happen in September-ish. It's called the Fall Creators Update. And as the name suggests, it's going to pick up from where the Creators Update, which just shipped in March or April, depending on how you look at it, sort of began. And so there's foundational technologies that were in the Creators Update that will factor very prominently into the Fall Creators Update. But there's also a bunch of new stuff coming. And I think the most exciting things that Microsoft announced this week are those cross-platform technologies that Frank was kind of alluding to. You know, this notion that if you have Windows 10 on one of your devices, it can make your other devices better. And so there were four of them, and off the top of my head, one is called Timeline. Timeline is a way to look at all of the things that you were working on in specific bits of time. And the way I think of it is as a combination of task view, which is a Windows 10 feature where you can kind of compress all of your running applications in Windows into a single kind of thumbnail view. And then the back in time functionality of file history, where you can kind of go back in time virtually and see views of your documents as they were at certain points in time. And so what this does is provide you with what applications in Windows were open at a specific slice in time. If you just do it on your PC, that works fine. But if you have this thing connected up with your devices, you can also see what you were doing on your iPhone, your Android device, whatever that might be. How's the headphone?
I think I'm back.
Right. So I don't know if you heard what I was going through there, but the second of those two kind of cross-platform technologies that they talked about for the Fall Creators Update is called, I mean, I should probably just make sure I get this correct before I say it, Pick Up Where You Left Off.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, basically some functionality you see on other platforms, but it's always within the same ecosystem. And the idea here is that maybe you're researching something for a document, or you're actually writing a document, and it doesn't matter which device you're on, you can pick up that workload on a different device. So you might start doing it on a phone, you might start doing it on a PC, but as you switch back and forth, you can actually pick up again from where you're at. The third of the four is Clipboard. This is what it sounds like. It's a cross-platform clipboard. It relies on the SwiftKey keyboard, which makes tons of sense because there's no other way for Microsoft to do this on mobile devices. And so you can copy things to the clipboard on your phone and then access those, paste them right on your Windows 10 PC or vice versa. And then, of course, the final one is OneDrive Files on Demand, which is the return of placeholders, but done in a much more efficient way and done in a way that actually adds some additional new features as well. And I think what's interesting about these things is as you kind of go down the list, each of them has this kind of mobile play part. And so Cortana factors into two of these things, the SwiftKey keyboard, like I said, and then OneDrive, obviously, for OneDrive files on demand. And so if you have those three solutions across all your devices, you'll have kind of a much more complete experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, did you – I didn't hear you earlier, but did you talk about how – many times they talked about Microsoft Graph and Keynote 2 today.
Yeah, and yeah. I sort of broached that with Frank a little
Frank,
bit because even to someone like me who is fully involved in the Microsoft ecosystem, the Microsoft Graph to date has been something kind of complex. It's an Office 365 feature, essentially, to date. It's something that commercial customers would use. It's something they would use internally for the most part. Not always, but mostly internally. And so it's really interesting that the connective glue between these cross-device experiences is the Microsoft Graph, right? Which is now not just Office 365 commercial. It's not just Office 365. It's kind of the Microsoft experience. It is, of course, called the Microsoft Graph, not the Office 365 Graph. I find that to be fascinating.
Yeah.
But I also think it's going to be a little confusing to people, especially to typical consumers.
I know. Yeah. And, you know, I think most consumers never will hear about the Microsoft Graph, right? Like, it's something that's built into the fabric that underlies how everything connects. But what's interesting is, if you remember when Microsoft used to talk about the Microsoft Graph, Satya Nadella, I think, when it was first introduced in 2015, said something like, "This is my favorite Microsoft API." Remember that? Okay. And at the time, none of us really knew what it was. It was like, there's this unified API for all these different endpoints in Office 365. And like, why is he saying this is his favorite thing? Right. And now, as time has gone by, now it's very obvious why he said that. It's because everything at Microsoft is connecting through this, from Azure Active Directory to Outlook to OneDrive, now Project Roam, which they talked about today, which is a feature that's similar to Apple's handoff technology, is connected through the Graph. Planner, SharePoint, you name it. Like, everything is connected through this one centralized API. So I don't think users are ever going to hear the words Microsoft Graph, but developers are going to have a lot of incentives to build to this API if they want their applications to tie in.
Exactly. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. It's funny you kind of alluded to something I was thinking, which was, I don't remember the original introduction to Microsoft Graph. And what I meant to do was go back and watch a video of that presentation, because I'm curious if there are hints in it about how important this is, or was, right, and is becoming. Because to me at the time, it was an Office 365 feature. I sort of locked it in that kind of box in my head a little bit, and I didn't pay much attention to it in this because, you know, I can't take advantage of the graph in Office 365 in my one-person Office 365 subscription, yeah. Right? There are no inputs for me, right? I'm the only input. So I don't have a lot of direct experience with it, but it's, yeah, they said this so many times this week that it finally, you know, finally just entered my brain. Like, I really need to go back and look at this again because mm-hmm. I'm very curious to see if they did not hint, you know, to this future.
Mm-hmm. I think we should take a break to see mm-hmm. if we can fix Mary Jo's mic and also to thank one of our sponsors. This show, Windows Weekly, is sponsored by WordPress. If you are going to create something wonderful, you need a support system. I like to think of myself as the support system, part of the very large support system of today's Windows Weekly. And my support system is WordPress. WordPress created my website for me, helped me create my website. I didn't have to spend a whole bunch of time. I could do what I wanted to do, and it was super easy. You have hundreds of themes to choose from to get you started. All you have to do is pick one of their templates that fits your personal blog, your business site, not just for personal blogs. You might think blogs are old-fashioned. They're not. They're still around for people who just want to have their thoughts be heard or who want to have a blog for their brand. Everyone needs one. Even if it's just really a landing page, it's important to have one. You will make a big impact if you build your website on WordPress.com. You get built-in search engine optimization, which is amazing. You don't have to worry, like, am I getting seen in all the search sites? You don't have to, like, pay a snake oil salesman to do this for you. They already have it built in, and they know what they're doing. They've been around for a long time. And social sharing. So you can get your, you can have things shared on Twitter or Facebook or wherever your audience is. Wherever they are, you can have your content be seen by them super easy. You're also part of a community when you join WordPress. You have support 24/7 when you need it. Their support has been amazing for me. I have a lot of questions. I can be needy when it comes to web design, and they have been really, really helpful. More websites run on WordPress than any other platform. So I'm super glad that I've gone back to WordPress. Leo has too. I like the design. I like how easy it is to use. You don't have to spend a lot of time messing around. You can just have your portfolio, your blog. You can really make the impact that you want to make with WordPress, and you can be in and be out of it and, you know, update it regularly, update it seldom, have it bring in your Twitter feed or Facebook if you're there more often. It's beautiful. You can be seen the way you want to be seen on the web. You can get started today with 15% off any new plan purchase. All you have to do is go to wordpress.com/windows to create your website and find the membership plan that's right for you. They have a lot of different plans, whether you're a business or just trying to build a business or just trying to have a place on the web where people can find you. That's wordpress.com/windows for 15% off your brand new website. And we thank WordPress for their support. If you're just joining us, this is Windows Weekly. I am Megan Maroney. Leo is out this week, but Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott are here with some special guests from Build, Microsoft Build Conference. And I am going to turn it over once again to the experts. Take it away, Windows experts.
We have a really interesting guest now who's somebody who's been with Microsoft for a long time in various roles. Some people may know him as Mr. OneNote, I believe, from his previous life. but now he's working on something new because he's got as his title Corporate Vice President of Windows. This is Chris Pratley. Chris, thank you for coming on the show. This is great.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Nice. So you got to tell us what you're doing at Microsoft because we're kind of in the dark.
Yeah. So I'm in charge of the Studio Remix project, Story Remix project, which we announced today. We've been working on it for a while, and I have to say I'm having a great time today because it's one of the, you don't get to launch new products every day. Let's just say so. It's pretty great day for the team and for me. And I was really excited to see the reaction people are having to the product. What we really wanted to do with it was to make it incredibly easy, whether you know what you want to do or you have no idea and just need inspiration, to tell your story through media. And as we all know, media is exploding all over the place. Videos and photos are filling up everyone's hard drives and cloud storage. And the idea was, how do we make that something accessible? And that's what we're showing today.
Very cool. We heard some hints, I think a year ago or so, about something that Microsoft was doing that was called Evoke Studio. And we heard they were building a storytelling app, but that was like all we really knew. And so everybody was trying to guess what was that and what would that look like. So when I saw the Remix app that you did today, I thought a lot about Sway, which you also were involved with.
Right.
There were a lot of things in there that reminded me of how you can really use Video Remix in a way like you can use Sway to tell a story in a different way, and you don't have to be a video remixing expert to use this tool. Is that the idea?
True. Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely what you see in both those applications, and you'll actually see it in more and more of the products and experiences that we're making in Windows and Microsoft these days, is the idea of infusing AI and deep learning techniques into the software experience. So if you think about, like, say 20 years ago, the standard was, here's a lot of buttons, and you can spend the time to learn how to press those buttons and do the right thing, but it's a very manual process. And what we're seeing, even just in the last 5 years, and if you remember when you and I talked about Sway a couple years ago, I mentioned that there's this revolution coming in the AI space where we can learn from your data, we can encode in an AI system the skills of a professional designer. And what you see in Story Remix is kind of an evolution of that idea, where we've done deep machine learning on all sorts of sets of video and photos so that we can understand not just, oh, there's a person in here, but who is that person? Which of the pixels in the image are that person? Which are the background? These pixels are a dog. This is the ground. These are the walls. And once you have that level of deep understanding of what's in media, and you can do personalization off of how people use their media, what they view the most often and so on, then we can take all that data, put it through our AI system, and tell the story for you if you don't have the time or the inclination to learn how to use a tool. And on the flip side, we don't want to do everything automatically for you and cut you out of the process. So really the idea is, again, if you know what you're doing, you can use that as a starting point. And I'm sure we've all had that moment of blank page terror where you're like, I don't know where to start. And so we just say, how about this? And if you don't like it, that's where this Remix button comes in. And that is very similar to Sway. I don't know if that's what I want, but I want to see what else there is. Oh, I like that, but what else is there? And it's just a click. And the idea is, instead of forcing you to make all the decisions up front and be correct, which gives a lot of people anxiety, it's more like you go into a clothing store and you say, do I like this dress or that dress? You know, this suit or that suit. Everyone can say they like something better than another thing. That's not a high anxiety decision. And so we start you there, and the more you want to dig in, and you see it in the video, the more you want to customize and drop in your own special effects and things from the Remix 3D community, or change the order, or tweak the music, whatever you want to do, we have the flexibility in there. But if you don't know what you're doing or you don't have time, then you can do something too.
Is there a Microsoft Graph connection to this somehow?
Yeah, there is. As the Microsoft Graph gets filled out with more and more data types,
yep.
We expect to be using it more and more. One of the things we're already looking into is using the Graph to do continuity of mobility of experience across devices. So if you're on the PC working on a story and you pick up your phone, when you launch the Story Remix app, or if you've got Cortana on your phone, it'll say, hey, you were just working on your PC on this task, making a video. Do you want to just jump right into Story Remix on the phone and continue from there? And it works in the other direction as well. And so, and even from PC to PC, of course. So the idea is, you know, a lot of us do this. We go to work, you got a machine at work, you're working, you go home, you want to pick up where you left off. And that's where the Microsoft Graph provides that continuity. And then as the platform fills out, we expect to use it to carry your personalization across devices as well as anything else we can think of that makes sense to make the machine you're working on no longer this like unique object that you have to carry with you. I can just move from machine to machine and it's fluid. That's the mobility of experience that Satya often talks about.
I was curious if there is any play for HoloLens in this too, or mixed reality, right? Like it seems like there could be some connections there.
Seems like there might be. Yeah, there could be.
Maybe.
Yeah. So actually, one of the things I was so excited about working in this new studio is and working on this product is that all around us, there's people working on the HoloLens and holographic experiences, mixed reality on 2D screens, which you saw some of also last week at our education event. And what you're seeing is, it's, you know, it's not limited to one corner where it's, oh, special 3D only this special hardware. It's really taking that experience and bringing the real into the virtual or the virtual into the real across all these device types. And so we are just down the hall from the HoloLens experience team. And in fact, we shared some assets in our demonstration, you know, the dinosaur, that kind of thing. But also technology. The HoloLens has the ability to scan an environment and understand what it's seeing, and we are taking part in that as well. So we actually think Story Remix might end up in a HoloLens experience too. That's also a Windows device. In fact, Story Remix is a universal Windows app, so you'll see it on Surface Hub and Xbox and so on.
So what do you want developers who are here to do? Like, you showed them this new app. Like, what's your message to them about this?
Right. So the first-party apps effort at Microsoft is really built for a number of reasons, but a big one is to show what's possible on the platform. And sometimes people say, oh, universal Windows apps, you know, you can't really do anything interesting, and we're here to show you today, totally, you can totally do interesting stuff. It's a, quite a mature platform now. And in fact, one of our roles is, beyond the demonstrating, is we actually work directly with the Windows platform team to evaluate what they're offering, give them feedback, and tell them, you know, if you really just added this one other thing, it'd be really useful for us app developers. And so we're kind of the first line of software development feedback that they get even before they're public with their ideas. And that partnership lets us together make a great Windows platform. And then, of course, we get to show up with our first-party applications on top of that.
Is there any opportunity for them to build things that could go into the video app? There is, right?
There. I would say it's early days. Where you, okay, you heard Lorraine say the Remix 3D community APIs will be made public so that anybody can play by pulling down or pushing up things into that community. And we're looking at ways we can extend that concept, among other things. You'll already know, we work with the Cognitive Services team in Azure and share technology with them. They gave us some stuff, we give them some stuff. So a lot of the technology you see around object understanding, that actually is working its way into Azure Cog services as well, which any application can use.
Cool. Very cool. So yeah. What's next from the Evoke Studios? Any hints, guidelines?
Well, we have a lot of work to do to get a lot of what you saw on stage to the point where we want to put it out in public. What we did do today was we released the first tranche of functionality to insiders. And so if you're an insider, you should check out the Photos app on your machine, because that's what we're building on top of. And that does have the video editor as well as the photo searching in it. And as we get these the mixed reality stuff to a state where we think it's ready for people to bang on, that'll come out to insiders as well. So the rest of the year is full of a lot of exciting, you know, product release work for us. And then there's the secret stuff I can't tell you about.
Darn. You know, we were talking before you came in about one of the questions Paul and I get from everybody all the time is, what's going to happen now that there's no more Movie Maker in Windows? And so I'm kind of curious if this has, you know, if you guys are looking at this as, it's not Movie Maker, but this is what we're going to give you instead of Movie Maker.
It may be a more relevant type of app today than a really technical, you know, video editor, right? That this is the type of thing that makes sense today, maybe more so than a Movie Maker or an iMovie or whatever.
I think that's exactly right. You know, Movie Maker and iMovie were designed 20 years ago. Right, those are things. That model was, you can easily do everything yourself, which was great back then. And now that we have AI and all this machine learning is permeating everything, there's no need to easily do it yourself. We'll immediately do all the easy stuff. And what we want you to do is, instead of having you be the editor, you notice we try not to refer to Story Remix as a video editor. It does that, but really it lets you be the director. You get to say, punch it up a bit. I want to star this person, right? You're giving directorial input into the process of creating your story. Being the director is way more fun than being the editor. No offense to any editors there, but I'm sure there's someone listening to this right now. But being the editor is a lot of tweaky work. It's hard work. It does get exactly what you want. That's why when that's important, you use the editor. But when that's just drudgery and you care more about the content and the storyline, then we want to make the director the king here. So we're trying to turn all of our customers into people who can just say what they want and get it. And ultimately, that's the goal. We want to be able to say, in fact, maybe I'll give you a foreshadowing. We want you to be able to say, make this more exciting to Cortana, and the video will get more exciting. There's no reason we can't hook all those things up now that we have an AI agent essentially working on your behalf.
Right. I feel like I'm...
No promises. I didn't promise that, just so you know.
Okay. No, no.
Chris Prattley said...
it's a possibility.
We're just, you know, daydreaming here. Okay.
It's fascinating to me that you're still here in a way, because OneNote was itself so amazing at the time, and still, I still use it every day, but it's...
Thank you.
It was one of those things where you don't quite understand that you need it, and then they show it to you, and you wonder how you ever lived without it, right? And it's a way of thinking differently about something that we all kind of do. You did it again with Sway, right? Instead of like, maybe we could make PowerPoint easier, let's think about the way we might do this today. And then, of course, this new tool is kind of the same thing. So where do you live? What water do you drink? What's going on?
I would say, I mean, one of the things, honestly, I'm really grateful for is working at Microsoft all these years, it's been a place where they're willing to take chances and take bets on new things. And, you know, they don't need return on the first month or whatever. There's a lot of belief in the ability of technology to do good for people. And so when I worked on OneNote, it was 3 years in development, and then we unleashed it on the world, and people liked it. That was great. Personally, what I get joy out of is talking to people and understanding I have an opportunity to solve problems for them or make their life easier. In fact, all three of those products were the result of just talking to lots of people and then having a moment with other people on the team as well. Like in the case of OneNote, people are so disorganized, they wish they were more organized. They didn't want to work at it. With Sway, it was people have media and they want to tell a story, but how do you put that cool stuff up on the web? I don't know how to do that. Especially with Sway and with Story Remix, talking with teachers has been a thing I've been doing for a few years now. And when I talk to teachers, they say, you know, the traditional tools, you know, typing and stuff is fine. That's what you think of as schoolwork. But these days, kids are looking for engagement. They have YouTube and games and so on. And what the teachers are asking for is tools they can use for pedagogical good, you know, to help kids actually learn, not just tech for tech purposes, but that are engaging. And so we heard that with Sway. We hear it with Minecraft. We hear it with Story Remix in our little private trials we've been doing, where the teachers say, what's so great about this is if I can ask the kids to work together, which team project-based learning is a big thing in schools these days, I can ask those kids to work together on the engaging project. They're excited. They don't even know they're learning. They're not just learning facts, because the ages where like teachers used to tell you stuff from the front of the room and you had to remember it, that's when we were in class. They don't do that anymore. There's already Google, Bing, whatever. There's facts everywhere. The problem is, what are the real facts, which are the alternative facts? You know, what are, you know.
Yeah, can you solve that problem next, please?
that's too hard to solve. Yeah. It's impossible. But the point is, what they want kids to learn is not just those facts, but how to critically think about them, how to tell their story, how to turn those facts into an insight or a narrative that they get across. And so the tools we're making are things where the teachers say, it's so great to have this because the kids pay attention, they don't drift off, and they're working on it, and at the end they don't even know, but they just got a lot more engaged and they learn more things. So that's actually what drives me and most of the people I work with.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, you make me wonder if there's any cross synergies with Minecraft and gaming and what you have here, right? Oh. Why am I asking a gaming question?
Yeah, go ahead, this is good, keep talking.
But you know how, like, Microsoft's talking a lot about using Beam, you know, for streaming, and this just kind of makes me think, okay, you know, there are videos of real things that are happening in your world and your family and your kids and all, but, like, what about videos of things that aren't in the, quote, real world, right? I mean, is
totally.
there a play there?
Well, we showed you on stage today dropping 3D assets into the real world.
Yeah.
And you can absolutely reverse that and do video of artificial virtual worlds with real assets in them. Put yourself. In fact, you saw that in our sort of video that we rolled at the beginning. Where you can replace the whole background, even put people into a whole 3D world. We're actually talking with the Beam guys about what we could do with them. They're also like us in very early stages. And you mentioned Minecraft. You know, Minecraft is a virtual world full of 3D assets. And we consume 3D assets. So, that's a beard stroke moment. Yeah, lots of things that are possible. It's actually super exciting for us because it's a whole new world of the virtual and 3D, whether the 3D is in virtual environment or not. Yeah.
That's cool.
Thanks. Anything else you want to make sure people know? That
well, I'm personally looking forward to a video from you of your vacations because I know you made sways of your trips, so I want to see that. And feel free to put a T-Rex in there if you like to.
T-Rex eating sushi with...
I know. I'm about to go on vacation, so I was actually thinking of making some more sways.
Oh, that makes me happy too. Thanks. Yeah. Sure. I would also, just the last thing I'd say is please go out and try it. It is out there for insiders. One of the things we're doing through, as you know, the insiders program is not just like a faceless beta thing where we push things out. We actually are dying to hear from people. This is great, but have you thought of this? This is how I would use it. We're trying to do a co-creation with our user base. And so that the set of people who have the app will keep expanding over time. And we're looking for that feedback. So I really would love people to use it, share what they're doing, you know, post videos they make, get to us on the user feedback forums. We love that back and forth because we're creating this together with our customers.
Cool.
Nice. Thank you so much. Yeah.
My pleasure.
Yeah. So good to see you again.
I know.
See you.
Yep. All right.
All right.
It's you and me again.
Yep. Sorry. Let's tell Chris Pratley stories while he's gone.
Thank you. I have a question for you guys. What the app's not out. Story Remix isn't out yet, right?
So it's today Microsoft shipped a new build of the Windows 10 Insider Preview that has that app in it. And it will be rolled out, you know, publicly in the Windows 10 Fall Creators Update in September.
And then will it be available for iOS?
Will it be available for iOS REST?
It's in the roadmap.
Roadmap. It's in the roadmap, but not I guess, concurrent.
Not yet. Okay. Gotta ask.
I know. You're a Mac user. You gotta ask.
Yeah, because I mean, it looks very cool. And I've played around with Clips, which is, I guess, the Apple equivalent. And, you know, it's not so great.
Yeah. I mean, I first, you know, when they first started demoing it, I kind of dismissed it as Clips. But then you see the demo and you realize, wait a minute.
Yeah.
This is a little more complex than that. And in fact, is kind of a cool, modern, you know, he didn't want to call it video editing, but, you know, for lack of a better term.
Yeah. And they're pushed into schools. I mean, they're pushed to try to compete with Chromebooks. I really think this is exciting, like he was talking about, that, you know, I could see that this would really help kids increase their creativity.
He's always been kind of thinking different. It's really interesting. Yeah. I shared with him this story when he came in before we were recording that, you know, when he launched OneNote, and I think it was in 2003, I think it was maybe concurrently or right after the tablet PC launch. You know, I sat there in the audience and I thought, this is crazy. These guys have made something that's perfect for what I do, but I don't understand why anyone else would want it. You know, and so I asked him, I said, why did you make something that was so perfect for me? You know, it just didn't kind of make sense to me, but it's such a neat tool. And we still, you know, we use it for the show notes today. So 15 years later, you know, we're still using this tool, which is really neat. So we're going to have Brad Sams come on, unfortunately. Obviously, we've run out of guests. It's just one of those things. Oh, there he is.
There he is. He just popped up on our screen.
Well, he's going to pop up on our screen for real.
Yeah.
One of my favorite moments on Twitter this morning was when, Brad, you were fact-checking yourself, and Paul was then fact-checking you. And
it's the story of my life.
Actually, the best tweet was somebody said something to the effect of, if you want to know what's wrong with Twitter, Brad is tweeting, Paul is correcting him on Twitter, and they are sitting next to each other in the room.
So I take it you guys enjoyed that little clippy endeavor?
Yes. I think Frank looked
over and I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, I think he was genuinely flustered.
He was. He was kind of stunned.
We don't usually get that from Frank. You know, he's an ex-Marine. He's very calm. He has the mouth of Sauron.
So Frank walked out of here and he looked at me and he said, that was pretty good.
And actually, you know, so maybe we should tell the story about what instigated this because, you know, we went through two pre-briefings. before the events, and he specifically called out Brad in a way that was interesting. Yes, I mean, for lack of a better term. So maybe you could.
Yeah, and so we're sitting there in this conference, the conference hall. There's, you know, dozens of other journalists, maybe even hundreds at that point, of people we don't know who cover Windows. We don't really know how they cover it. Anyways, we're sitting there, and he called me out for a grammar mistake on Twitter. And it's like, come on, Frank, it's Twitter. And then lo and behold, actually, another journalist tweeted me or sent me a message as, hey, Frank's got a couple issues in his own slides, but that's beside the point. And Paul, it was either you or me or somebody said, you know, it would be hilarious is if Clippy walked in and said, hey, I see you're trying to insult Brad. Here are a few suggestions. Yep. And pulled a few strings, and you know what? We got a hold of the Clippy suit, and I walked in on Frank and did exactly that.
What's amazing about the Clippy suit, aside from the terrible smell it being emitted from it, is that it's actually – this isn't in someone's closet at work, right? It's right. In, like, the Microsoft archives. So you were – I don't know if we can say who did this for us, but Brad got somebody to go into the archives and pull it out and drive it in his car over here, I guess. Which is – I mean, it's kind of amazing, like, that we got this thing here.
Did you walk around the convention floor wearing it?
So – I think we should do that after this.
I think you should. You.
Yeah, yeah.
You.
I'm probably going to need some fluids. It is very warm in there. There's a lot of lost careers that have died inside that costume. But when I had to walk all the way over from basically the press area over to here. So to walk through like all three levels and all that stuff. And I believe if I was driving a Bugatti, I would have gotten less looks. Like, everyone was, like, looking at me going, like, is that really Clippy? I'm like, yes, I'm going to go wear this for a joke. And
yeah, you're like the mascot at, like, a major sport team event or whatever. You know, this is our said mascot, unfortunately. It's worse than an avocado or a cardinal. It's just the, you know, what it is.
It is.
And so definitely a shout-out to Microsoft for at least
humoring us.
Yeah, humoring us and allowing us to get our hands on that. Big shout out to them. So that was fun. It worked out well.
Very nice.
I'm so glad you did that. There is no amount of money on earth that would have caused me to get inside that suit.
No, when we were riding the Ferris wheel, I said your career peaked in 1994. Mine peaked at about 11:30 on May 11th. Yeah, so 2017.
Nice.
Alrighty. Nice. You guys going to keep rocking on with the show?
Yeah. You're going to stay on with us, aren't you?
Oh, I guess. I wasn't. I could stay on. I was like, I'm going to go sit over there.
Oh, Brad, we're counting on you for 40 minutes of content, so settle in.
Great.
Well, before I'll give Brad a couple minutes to figure out all the witty and grammatically correct things that he is going to say. And I'll take a minute to thank our sponsor. The sponsor of Windows Weekly today is Upside. If you haven't heard of Upside, I want to tell you about it. It's a great service if you have a small business and you travel. It is a great way to stay in great hotels and get great deals and also get gift cards for yourself, which everyone wants. Upside is the best way for small business and medium-sized companies to book business travel. Upside's a revolutionary site. It's brought to you by Jay Walker. You might have heard of Jay Walker. He's such an interesting guy. We got a chance to talk to him. I really enjoyed our conversation. He's the founder of Priceline, and he has this great idea, and he's super enthusiastic about it, which I think always speaks well for a company. Now, what he says that Upside will do for you is let you save money on business travel, and also you get a free gift card with every trip you book. And it's not just any gift card. You can choose from lots of different gift cards. Amazon is one. So, you know, you can buy stuff there. There's 50 top brands, also including Target and Nordstrom's. It takes just a few minutes to find out how much you can save by booking your flights and your hotels together. That's the convenience of Upside.com. I mean, we used to have someone booking all of our travel and they did all the dirty work. And now it's often up to us when we work for small businesses. And no one enjoys doing this. It's just super stressful to try to find the best deal. And you always feel like you're going to be taken advantage of somehow. And then you find yourself wasting 3 or 4 hours looking for the best deal. And as we know, time is money. So whatever money you might have saved, you lost in the time you spent on all those websites. You also still get all your frequent flyer miles. It's not like you're turning your frequent flyer miles in for these Target or Amazon gift cards. You get those too. You get to choose the hotel, the airline, and the flight times. So you're not flying in the middle of the night if you don't want to. If you do want to fly in the middle of the night, you can do that too. You can call, email, chat, or reach Upside on social media before, during, and after every trip. They're super responsive. If you travel frequently, your company will save a ton of money. So it's not only you getting your Amazon gift card, but you can also say to your boss, hey, look at how much money I saved you. You can get even more if you travel overseas. Your gift card will arrive in the mail just 72 hours after booking your trip, which is great. Spend that money right away. Buy yourself some new luggage for your trip. There's no limit on trips or gift cards. So if you travel a lot, it might be frustrating, but all you have to do is think about all the gift cards you're going to get. If you travel for business or you know people who do, tell them about Upside. You can also use it yourself, even if you're not traveling for business. But if you know someone who has a small business or works for a small business, give them this tip. They will appreciate it. Book your business travel at upside.com. Get a $100 minimum gift card on your first trip and use promo code Windows. That's upside.com and promo code Windows. Save big on travel and get big gift cards for every trip. There's a minimum purchase required. See site for complete details. Of course, this week is Microsoft Build, the developers conference. Everyone is excited. So many announcements. I am going to turn it over to the experts. We have Mary Jo Foley, Paul Theriot, and Brad Sams, previously who dressed up as Clippy, if you haven't seen the whole episode. If you found yourself fast-forwarding, go back. You don't want to miss that. It was pretty exciting. Take it away, guys.
Yeah, so I thought we could go back to the opening day and kind of step through some of the announcements that occurred. One of them is kind of personal for you because you've written a lot about this in the past, but Harman Kardon on the eve of Build announced the very first Cortana-powered smart speaker. And then on day zero or day one of Build, Microsoft announced that Intel was going to build a reference platform that other device makers could build. And I think that might be all of it. We don't know anything about other Cortana speakers yet, do we?
Correct. We know that there's Intel reference. We know that HP is going to build it. And Harman Kardon is the only one who's actually shown hardware. And that's really all that we know right now. It's coming this fall. And we don't have a price point, I don't believe.
No. But we know it's US only, which has bummed out a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. The other thing, too, is you can use it with an iOS device. So
right.
That was, I think, in the footnote. Right. If you have a Mac, you could actually buy one of these.
That's right. Yeah. Well, so you need to have Cortana, right? I think that's the key. And that explains the US only bit. Cortana is sadly still fairly limited. I know it's not only in the US, but it works best in the US by far. And that's a situation Microsoft needs to kind of figure out, but has not done so far.
No.
You got Visual Studio 2017 for Mac available. That's the old Xamarin Studio. The big news on day one to me was 500 million Windows 10 active devices. So this is a good number, bad number? Survey says.
I think it's good, actually. I think, you know, we already knew that growth wasn't going to stay at the clip it was at the beginning when they were giving it away for free.
Yep.
But now I think it's stabilizing and... but still growing, you know. So I think it's respectable to be at 500 million active. Is it active monthly devices?
Active devices,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Right now. So let's see if they can keep that momentum going, I think.
So I want to qualify that statement just with my one thought. I agree that it is a good number. What we don't know is how many businesses have moved to Windows 10.
Right.
If that's 500 million that's mostly consumer, that's a great number. But if that's 500 million and 200 million of them are businesses, that's not such a great number. Because Microsoft keeps telling us that they expect Windows 10 will just start growing real quickly as companies with 100,000 machines go fire up Windows 10. So if it could be a very, very good number.
It's interesting. I would say to that if Microsoft saw an appreciable uptick in commercial, they would have said that number, I think. They tend to pull those things out. But I will, you know, because I do this kind of math, I'm terrible at math, unlike you, but I do this kind of math every time they announce a number. I look at the number of months and I compare it to how Windows 7 did, which is kind of the benchmark or the bellwether. And the interesting thing there is, over time, every time that they've announced a figure for Windows 10, the average numbers of, you know, new devices coming online each month has gone down. Early on, it was, you know, 30-something million a month. It was 20-something million a month, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere around 12 or 14 million a month now. Windows 7 achieved 20 million units per month over its entire three-year lifespan. But that was artificial. The interesting thing is, if you do the math on 20 million per month, and you look at 2 years of Windows 7, you're talking about 480 million licenses sold. Well, 500 million in less than 2 years is a bigger number, and it took them less time to get there. And so, ultimately, I know there are all these caveats to this. I know that Windows 7 probably was higher, that they were, in fact, holding licenses back so they could pad future months. That's the type of accounting they did. There's no doubt about that. But still, and of course, they had the $1 billion promise that is nowhere close to being met. But right. 500 million is 500 million. And it says something about our world that we're looking at a number like 500 million and criticizing it, right? And I don't mean us. I don't mean the three of us. I mean everybody, right? This should have been a much bigger news story than it was. That's an enormous number for a platform that is supposedly dying, for a product that nobody supposedly wants. You know, I mean, it's very interesting.
I mean, and for a platform that really people don't have to adopt if they're on Windows 7 till 2020.
Absolutely. Yep.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing.
Yeah, and even for consumers, you know, when you buy a PC, that thing lasts for a long time. I mean, most people are not going to upgrade to Windows 10, even if it's free, and clearly haven't, I guess, in some cases. But, yeah, you use that thing until you can't. And I think there's upside. I think business upside is going to drive it in the future, and I think the natural life cycle of these devices will drive it in the future, that we just haven't hit that point yet.
Do you think any of the UWP apps announced today, like Autodesk and any of that kind of stuff, is going to help drive adoption?
I'm sorry. Was that a serious question?
No.
I mean, you know, for example, we know that, you know, like iTunes, for example, was announced today. iTunes is coming to the Windows Store. That's unbelievable. No, none of us expected that. Nobody would have predicted such a thing. I know from my sources at Microsoft that for many years, the two most popular third-party applications on Windows are Chrome number one and then iTunes number two. You know, you could make this argument on the one hand that people, you know, young people, I guess, I don't know how to say it, but, you know, non-traditional people are not going to be using iTunes, right? Even if you use Apple stuff, you do it on the phone. You know, that's where you have your stuff. You don't have to sync to devices and so forth. So, I mean, it's good news, and it's crazy good news in a way that Apple's even doing this. But, I mean, does it move the needle on adoption? I mean, is anyone going to run to upgrade? You can get iTunes on Windows today. You don't need to get Windows 10. Like, you know, I don't know that, you know, makes a difference.
I think it just shows people UWP is not dead, right? I mean,
well, actually, I mean, this is obviously a centennial port, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it is.
So, I'm not saying UWP is dead, but I mean, I think these hybrid UWP solutions like Project Desktop or Centennial are the future. And hopefully what this will do is show a bunch of smaller companies that if Apple can port a mess like iTunes into the store, then anyone can do that with their own apps.
I mean, that's what Microsoft did last week when they were showing the Centennial Office apps, right? The message was, guys, this is Office and we're doing this. So you can do this too if you use Centennial.
Yeah, I think they're going to position iTunes as a hero app. I really do. I think to your point, because Office is great. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with doing it with Office, but it's a Microsoft thing. They should be able to do this. Quite frankly, this probably should have done 2 years ago, 3 years ago. When Windows 10 launched, it should have launched with new store, new Office apps. But, you know, here we are a couple years later. But clearly the bridge works if Apple's willing to do it.
Yeah, and actually, you guys were both there. I don't want to call out this person because it was kind of said privately, but it was a kind of an interesting commentary because we asked about Chrome and would Microsoft be interested in changing its policies to allow Google to get Chrome into the store? Because right now there's a rendering engine issue where Google cannot use its own rendering engine and thus would not be interested in doing it. And Google also does its own form of sandboxing, and I think there are certain technologies in there that aren't compatible with the store. And the reply that we got from someone at Microsoft was, we're not interested in promoting or hurting Chrome. We're interested in protecting users, right? And we have these policies to help people, right? The idea is you're going to get great battery life. You're going to get great reliability, great performance, and so forth. And the only way we could do that is to ensure that the apps in the store meet these standards, you know.
And
that said,
Also, if Chrome goes in the store, no one's going to use Edge. So,
Yeah, you got that little caveat there, too.
That's a really cynical view, Mary Jo.
That was my Paul Theriot-inspired cynical comment of the week.
No, I actually felt a little warm and happy when you said that.
Paul, people can't – well, you can kind of see it there a little bit. On Paul, Clippy's sitting right behind Paul. And I keep thinking that if you say something wrong, Clippy is just going to put a knife right into your back.
If his little hand touches me on the shoulder, I'm probably going to jump out of the seat. All right, so what else we got? We obviously Visual Studio releases.
Cortana Skills Kit goes to preview finally.
Oh, that's right.
That's true. We did skip over some day one stuff.
Right. So, you know, if you know what Alexa skills are, there are also an equivalent called Cortana skills. There's been a kit for developers to build Cortana skills, but it's been in private preview until this week. Now, if you're a developer, you can take this kit, port over Alexa skills more easily to Cortana, develop brand new Cortana skills using the bot framework. So this is a kind of a big deal. I mean, Alexa's so far ahead of Cortana in the skill space, but at least the public preview is finally out there.
And there's one that I saw that I'm actually pretty excited about. Dark Sky is announced availability for this. And if you're not familiar with Dark Sky, I got to wait and see how it works with Cortana on the desktop, but I love it. I use it on my iPhone, and it's great for hyper-local weather. It will tell you 10 minutes before it's going to rain, and it'll tell you how long it's going to rain and what is going on. And so I'm actually really happy to see that one's kind of an early adopter of this platform. So that's a positive sign. Let's hope that there's a little bit more momentum as, you know, the word gets out about this stuff.
Yeah. This isn't related to the show per se, but the room that we're doing this in is like a terrarium.
It is.
And I'm surprised, people walk by and they look at us in kind of a curious fashion. Some of them hang out for a little while. I'm surprised no one has tried to feed us. Like, you know, they have those pellets that they give out to animals.
They just put the quarter in, spin the dial.
Yeah, turn the nut. Yeah, exactly. It's really strange. It's kind of a weird fishbowl kind of a thing.
I know. Jeffrey Snover walked by. He's like, hey. It's like, hey.
Yeah, I ran into Terry Meyerson right outside.
Did you really? That's funny.
I don't think he'll mind me telling the story. He probably won't care at all. So I was talking to him and a couple other people, and I was waiting to get the word that the Clippy suit was here. You know, I'm talking with him. I took a selfie, Paul. You'll appreciate it. And I said, hey, I got to run. And Terry goes, who's more important than me? I was like, all right, Terry, I got to explain to you. I'm about to go get the Clippy suit and bomb Frank. And he goes, go ahead. That's it. That's worth it.
That's amazing.
Nice. What else? Let's do some more day one.
Did you talk about Cosmo?
No, we have not yet talked about Cosmos, which was actually the biggest news of day one.
It was by far. Quick question, Mary Jo. I don't know if you saw the tweets, but are you familiar with what the code name was for Cosmos?
This Cosmos, you mean?
Well, what they still refer to it, yeah.
No, what?
They're still going by Florence.
Oh, yeah, I did know that. Project Florence. Yeah.
Yeah, DocumentsDB was under Florence, and they're still using that code name to refer to Cosmos
DB. So Project Rome is something they talked about today, right? And so these things have to be related. Are they going after, Italian city-states from the 1600s? What's the theme here?
They're actually not related, the two Italian code names. I know. So Project Florence, like Brad said, was what they used to call DocumentDB, which was Microsoft's NoSQL database. Project Rome is the thing that's like Apple's handoff technology. So they don't really have any relation. They just both happen to be Italian code names.
As long as there's a system, I'm okay with it.
It's just making me hungry.
Right. So when Brad first asked me that question about Cosmos, I thought you were referring to the fact that there was something else that Microsoft codenamed Cosmos, which has nothing to do with Cosmos DB.
There what was the original codename of that? Milan?
No. Sorry. Yeah. Pompeii? Okay. No. So the original Cosmos was this big data storage and computation service that Microsoft still uses internally. It's called Cosmos. And some of Cosmos technologies became Azure Data Lake. It's not a Windows Weekly without saying Azure Data Lake. You have to say it at least once every show. But this Cosmos, Azure Cosmos DB, the way I described it in my post about it this week is it's a superset of DocumentDB. So DocumentDB is a NoSQL database. Cosmos is way bigger, as the name implies, and it allows you to store
all kinds of data in a single database that's globally distributed. So that, I know, it sounds like, oh, yeah, of course, right? But you can put graph data in there. You can put relational data there, documents, key value, like any kind of data can go in this one database that you can use in all of the data, all of the Azure. My Massachusetts accent's coming out. Uh-huh. All of the Azure data centers worldwide. I'm adding ours where they don't belong, taking them away where they do. So it's very interesting. There's a lot of things around service level agreements to make sure that you're going to be able to access your data instantaneously. That was really big news.
It really was. And one of the things, too, that really separates this, because Google has a platform, I believe it's called Spanner, which is Microsoft will get all up in your grill about it if you say they're comparable. But that's the closest thing that Google would have to it. But the big difference here is that Microsoft is putting SLAs behind this. They're putting, was it either 4 or 5 9 guarantee on that stuff? And this is a big deal because it's so simple that even Paul could log into the Azure portal and fire up a new replication database anywhere in the world and get that same latency. And you can think about the logistical challenge of trying to do that, of saying, hey, we're going to launch a table in the U.S. and you're in Sydney, Australia. You click a button and it's there. Microsoft pioneered this internally. They're actually telling me what how this many years ago this started to come about is Microsoft needs a service like this. Think about Xbox Live. They were using that example. It needs that level of SLA, and what they were doing is saying, okay, Xbox needs to run like this. It broke the SLA. How do we fix it? And after fixing it for so long and working on it, they eventually came to this Cosmos idea, and now they're bringing it to market in a really neat way. And I said, hey, what are your biggest hurdles with this? They said, well, there's no reason why we can't think of anybody wouldn't build into it. What we've got to develop is why people should port to this model, because migrating your current system to Cosmos, it's not hard, but it's something you would have to, you know, go out of your way to actually do. And so we're just starting to see this. Jet.com is already on it. They said they're doing, was it a trillion transactions already passing through? So it's relatively robust, and it's GA worldwide as of right now. It's a pretty neat setup.
Definitely.
Can you hear me okay through the...
Yeah, okay.
My headset is kicking out, so if you can hear me, then I'm not going to worry about it.
Yep.
All right. What else we got from day one? So let's not ever talk about Cosmos again if we can avoid it.
Okay. Let's talk about more database stuff.
How about Postgres?
Yes. This was huge. This was a huge announcement, and it actually got a lot of applause at the keynote. So right now, if you want to run other databases on Azure, you do it as infrastructure as a service. You put them in a container. You run them on Azure. As of this week that this is current. MySQL and Postgres are both going to be hosted on Azure, not in a container, but natively as platform as a service. So that they worked with these vendors to get these databases on top of Microsoft's infrastructure technology. I shouldn't use the word infrastructure because that's confusing. On top of platform as a service and make that work just like that.
Yep.
So that's pretty huge. They said there will be possibly other databases coming to Azure in the form of platform as a service. So that means you take advantage of all the things that SQL database on Azure takes advantage of. All the underlying plumbing, you automatically get that with your database. That was a really big deal. And I think Paul may not have thought it was impressive, but the developers did.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago, but I almost got an MCSE in SQL Server Database Management, and then also I think it was called an MCSD, was the developer version of T-SQL. And I am so glad those days are behind me. So glad.
Yeah. So I can tell you, related to this stuff, I said, okay, you know, you got this up and running. What's next? They are currently working to bring advanced threat protection, that sort of security umbrella, to this service, the fully managed side of it, at least, for sure. But there's no announcement yet, so they need to get this stuff up running. They need a huge database of telemetry to be able to say, okay, what's an outlier, what's that kind of stuff? Because false flags are the detriment of security. You get too many false flags, right? Nobody believes them anymore. But that is kind of the next iteration of where this is going. So shouldn't be a big surprise.
Yes. What about the cognitive services APIs? That was a big deal, too.
Yeah, like they – I guess if you the joke that I put out on Twitter is I need one of these things in my house so I can yell at the Sky computer when I can't find my keys. They showed obviously the workplace demo where you can tap into all this stuff, and that it shows the room and says, hey, look, there's 19 laptops in here. I'm a little bit more pessimistic about that example that they showed. Because what they were saying is, okay, you have a saw that's missing, or you can take it up wherever. Great. You know, you save 10 minutes of time, but you spent $6 million to put that infrastructure into your construction site. There has to be a balance of risk reward and profitability and revenue savings. But it's neat. It's a neat idea.
Yeah. So for people who are listening who don't know what cognitive services are, these are also APIs that you can use to add artificial intelligence into your apps and your services. Right now, there are 29 different ones on Microsoft's cognitive services site, and they are saying there are like more than 550,000 developers using one or more of these right now. So there are all kinds of different ones. Some of the ones they talked about this week were the customized ones, where you could take things like Bing Search and add your own custom data set to it, and they're calling that Bing Custom Search. So instead of just searching a generic domain, you could have it search something very specific. They have a custom vision service. So say you're a manufacturing company and you want to have the API work with pictures of your widgets and not pictures of dogs on the web. You know, something that's unique to you that's not indexed right now on the web, you can use that data set with this custom API. Video Indexer was really cool. They have this new one that takes video clips and it can index them in a lot of different ways. Like it can automatically tag them. It could do object recognition on them, sentiment analysis, you know, like are people happy who are looking at this or not happy? And what does that trigger? So that's another one that's in preview now. There are a whole bunch of new codenamed ones that are on the site that are things that they are calling their Labs project. So Labs projects are kind of like the Microsoft Garage. It's stuff that may or may not ever go commercial, but it's something you can go as a developer and play with things like gesture control, that route optimization stuff for people who are in transportation and shipping, that kind of stuff. So there, that was pretty interesting stuff if you're a developer who's like, I want to add AI to my app. I don't want to have to go learn Python. I don't want to have to learn R. I want to just be able to take something that exists and pull it in. This is how you would do that.
Very interesting. I'll be curious to see if the commercialization and how quickly that comes to market, right? You can show off all the demos you want. You can say, this is how it works. But then to put the butter on the bread, you got to actually make it profitable. You got to make it justifiable. And Mary Jo, like that analogy.
I like that.
And I'm hungry. You could eat Clippy.
God, trust me. There's probably
possibly
biodegradable material in there.
I can tell you there's probably a lot of moisture in that internal foam, so it should go down pretty well.
Yikes. What else on day one? The Edge. The Edge is one more thing we should talk about, because that was my buzzword bingo word.
Not to be confused with Edge.
No. The Edge, not the same as Edge browser.
Yep.
So, you know, we always keep hearing about Microsoft talk about mobile first, cloud first. Now they're going to start talking about intelligent cloud, intelligent edge. It's just another way of saying the same thing in a way. But the message here at Build was, don't just think that if you're developing IoT applications or other kind of applications with mobile devices, that everything has to come from a centralized database. Some of your data processing power and your analytics can actually be located closer to the device, if not on the device. That's the whole idea of the edge. So that's going to be something we're going to hear more about probably at every Microsoft event going forward. But we heard about it for the first time here.
There was some Office 365 stuff as well.
Yeah.
Office-related things, team programmability, and so forth.
Yep.
You know, today, maybe I'm alone here, but I was really excited by this Xamarin Live player preview, because if you're familiar with how Xamarin works today, you can develop apps on Windows directly. It's very easy. You can develop apps on Android to a virtual machine. If you want to develop apps to an iOS device, you have to have a Mac on your network. You have to connect to it remotely. The compiling and the app creation actually occurs through Xcode over that remote connection. And with this player, what you're going to be able to do is just plug a device directly into the machine and write the app right to the device, which is how we develop on other platforms that are usually made by the same maker, like Apple does that on the Mac. But you can also do debugging, live debugging. So with the program running on the app, you can actually halt the code, debug it, change the code, pick it up again. It will redeploy to the phone and just keep running. That looks awesome. And so for people who are interested in doing cross-platform developer stuff, Xamarin obviously is awesome. It just got a lot awesomer, I guess, if that's a term.
Awesomer.
Yep.
One thing to keep in mind, and I believe this is correct, definitely check before you go down this route. I believe you still need Xcode to be able to submit to the Apple Store, though.
Oh, that could be very well be. But, I mean, it's just for the ease of use of doing it. I spent a bunch of time this past week after I had finished the Xamarin Challenge trying to get the Mac part of it working so I could do the iOS part of it. And I actually never got it to work reliably. I had a really hard time with that. So I talked a little bit up front about some of the Creators Update stuff. I talked about those four cross devices experience timeline, pick up where you left off, OneDrive on demand files, and whatever the other one was. But actually, let me broach a topic now that Brad is in the room. Pains me to say this. I'd appreciate a little bit of sympathy here, but over the past, yep, it's coming. Over the past 2 years, there's been a lot of back and forth over placeholders in OneDrive. And I've consistently said, because I've heard this from my sources, that placeholders are not going to come back in the way that they were, that people remember them, and that there'll be a thing that replaces them that won't be the same. And you've written a bunch. In fact, I looked them up this morning over the years. In fact, as far back as I think it was December 2015, you wrote that Microsoft is bringing back placeholders. And actually, I have to admit, they brought back placeholders. And so, because the interesting thing, and what really colors this even further for me, is I met with Microsoft yesterday, and I asked them point blank. I said, so if you're offline, you won't see the files. And they said, right. And I said, well, then that's not placeholders, right? If you're just loading live thumbnails when you're online. That's what a mobile app does. And they confirmed it. And so I wrote my story. I thought, I'm right, and Brad was wrong, and this is good. And then they wrote me back, and they said, this thing you wrote is not correct. Actually, you can see the files when you're offline. I said, well, that's not what you told me yesterday. And they said, yeah, sorry. I said that it's so.
I don't think in this building there's a horse high enough for me to get on and to ride around. I might be able to ride around in Clippy, yep. But yes, I will enjoy this moment of zen.
Yep. So enjoy that.
Yeah, but this is really – people need to understand that these placeholders are very technologically challenging to make. This isn't some very simple iteration. This is deep down into the file system, into the infrastructure of Windows, because one of the problems you have is other applications trying to look at these where I think codenamed cloud files at one point, trying to actually open them. And when they're not there, it's just the shell or container of it. It created a lot of problems. And I know that Microsoft put some very smart people working on this stuff, and it took them a long time.
It took them 3 years.
Yeah.
And by the way, to that point, two things I'll say, one positive, one negative. They did this in a way that it retains compatibility with every application that runs on Windows, essentially. So if you use a normal file picker, the file open dialog in a Win32 app or the literal file picker in a UWP app, these things will work all the time. So even if the document or whatever it is you're trying to open the picture is not downloaded to the device, the app doesn't have to do anything special. It will just work. That was part of the complexity you were talking about. But the other thing we have to keep in mind, and we don't know the answer to this, is you can right-click on one of these files that we used to think of as a placeholder and get the size. And back in the day in Windows 8.1, that thing would have a size. It would be a small size, but it would be a size. If you right-click on that file today, it will say 0 bytes. It takes up zero space. Well, that's magical. So after they corrected me, even though they were the ones that made the mistake, I wrote back and said, so I'm just curious then. Space is being taken up on the disk somewhere. Where is it? Because you can't claim these things as 0 bytes. If I can see those files offline, they're taking up some amount of space. And so I don't know what that amount of space is, but this is what I know. There is a central cache. There's one file that takes up the space now instead of all the individual files. It's more efficient than it was in the past. That's the thing I don't know. And so if we were to pretend that it was, 25% the space that placeholders used to take up, there's still some amount of space that is taken up on that computer. What that means is if you have a lower storage device, you still have the potential to run out of space just because of using OneDrive, right?
Oh, wow.
So it's something so
interesting.
This is something we're going to have to look at more closely when we're actually able to use it on our own computers.
Sure.
But just so everyone understands how that works, mostly mm-hmm. because I was corrected today, and I really appreciate being corrected. anything like anyone else? Is anything else that stands out to you in the creators update that we saw today? We talked about the app, the Storyteller app with Chris Bradley, who yeah. designed it. We talked about the four cross-device experiences. I mean, is there anything else that kind of stands out to you?
Yes. So,
oh, go ahead.
Guys, you're forgetting Bash. And what's
so, Brad, is there anything else that stands out to you?
Well, let me don my fedora, Suse. No.
Yes. Yeah, Microsoft said today that, you know, right now Ubuntu Linux is the one that's supported in Bash, but they're going to be adding at some point in the not-too-distant future support for Suse and Fedora Bash Shell as part of Windows 10. And what's even more interesting for Paul, I'm sure, is you can download these shells from the Windows 10 store. So the Ubuntu shell, Fedora, and Suse shells all available for download from the Windows store.
I see some irony to that, by the way, because when I think of something technical and complex, I don't naturally think of the Windows store as the place to get that thing.
Right.
You're not alone. But, you know, this is a new day. It's a new day. So that's...
sure.
The other thing, Paul, and it pains me to point this out. I don't like pointing it out when you're correct either. But and this makes me nervous. It really does. Everything that looked really neat and interesting, like timeline and all this roaming stuff, everything was done as a conceptual video. This wasn't Joe up there moving the mouse. This was pre-choreographed things.
Yep.
And we've seen this before from Microsoft where they'll show off all this stuff, and then it comes September when they're going to ship this, and it's where is it?
This is Longhorn all over again. You know, you'll remember this. You, Brad, I think you were still 2 years away from being born. But back in 2003, when they introduced Longhorn to the world, what we later learned was all that stuff they were demonstrating on stage was fake. It was director videos. It wasn't real code. To be fair to Microsoft, the one thing I'll say, when Frank was out here earlier, we were talking about this notion of coding on stage and how some journalists think that's weird to do even – though this is a developer conference. The one thing that they did today that I thought was very effective was they had someone behind the scenes, supposedly it was Kevin Gallo, which is awesome, but whoever it was, typing the code. So Terry's on stage or somebody talking about the code that's happening, and someone else is doing the typing. And I have no problem with that at all. Yeah. I think that's you know, you don't want someone live typing and making spelling mistakes and people in the audience yelling out what they have to do to fix it. You know, I think that stuff is fine. But I took slight exception to the clearly demo-ware nature of those features that they showed off. I mean, they were very clearly not real running code.
Right.
And
Well, look what you didn't hear about this week, too. We also didn't hear about that viewer app that they showed in October, right?
You're right.
Where you could and take a 3D image on your phone and then have that turn into a 3D object. That's like gone missing at this point, right? Like there's no new date for availability. They didn't show it. They didn't mention it.
They refused to discuss it. Someone brought that up in the pre-brief, and the answer was simply no.
So that's a little worrisome when you see things like this, because you're like, how close are they? We didn't mention this. So Microsoft's still calling Windows 10 fall update a fall update. We thought they had committed to September as of a couple weeks ago for this to roll out. But when we asked that question this week, they did not say it would be September.
Yeah. So
maybe it slips a little so they can get more of these features into it.
So I sort of feel like it will probably still ship in September. I think I think that was more about just, you know, trying to give themselves some wiggle room and to bring that thing into the conversation, which is complete baloney, which is like, well, you know, we'll ship it when it meets a certain quality bar kind of thing. Like, sure you will. They did in fact commit to March and September. I mean, if it were April and October 1 year, would it matter? I mean, I don't think it matters, but I found it interesting that they were very specifically committed to specific months. Someone asked them about it, and they were like, well, I mean, you know, we don't have to get all specific here, do we? I mean, I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that was.
But I bet it ships on time. I'm sure it'll be fine. This seems like a more substantial update to me than the previous one, by the way. You know? And I know that some of it is based on the foundational work that did occur in the original Creators Update. We haven't talked about mixed reality either. I know you guys are both really excited about that. Anybody? But I will say this. I think it's great that Microsoft is doing what is really essentially a VR platform, right? And this is the one thing that I don't feel that they've adequately explained, because they show HoloLens, and then they show this $300 thing, and they say, well, there's going to be a Spectrum. But this, mm-hmm. the Spectrum is, there's a HoloLens, and then there's these other things that are all the same. And they might cost different amounts of money because some of them will have more processing power or whatever. But the only difference between these Microsoft mixed reality headsets and a traditional VR headset, like an Oculus Rift or a HTC Vive, is that the sensors that are required in those other solutions that have to be out in the room are actually built into the device. And so it's more of a standalone thing. And that's actually an important improvement over standard VR. And it's something that did come from HoloLens. And so there's your connection. But as far as integrating augmented reality objects like holograms or whatever into the real world view, you're not going to get that in these devices. These are fully occluded is the term that they use. I'm sure that's where Oculus comes from. It's probably the same word. But what it basically means is you're looking at whatever's in the visor. You don't see the outside world. That's not the same as HoloLens. It's not. I mean, and there is no spectrum per se, other than the fact that some of them will be more expensive and probably will, you know, maybe offer better graphics or more processing power.
But this is clearly, though, the stepping stone for HoloLens, right? They want to get these cheaper devices out. They want to hit mass market, because if people are building apps for Windows Holographic or Windows Mixed Reality, whatever they're calling it on the third day of the month, those apps will translate very well to HoloLens. So that's, I think, where they're going. Somebody put out a tweet that I need to verify this, and I don't know, just take it with a grain of salt. They said that HTC Vive and Oculus Rift are not going to be supported in those environments when they launch this later this year. That's
interesting.
And I double check all of that, because it came across as a tweet, but okay. I've heard behind the scenes that HTC wasn't very happy with Microsoft, mostly because they have the Vive that needs the sensors. Mm-hmm. It's also $700-$800, and Microsoft is coming out with something that I very strongly believe that they probably came up with the hardware requirements and the technology behind it. They're giving it to their OEMs, and they're just going to say, you know what, $300 is the price point. And so those guys aren't very happy with these.
If I could pretend to be Microsoft PR, and I often cosplay as Microsoft PR, I think the answer there is going to be something along the lines of, you know, we're busy getting this platform out. We have to support the platform. It's not hard to imagine bringing Windows Mixed Reality to Oculus Rift and HTC Vive in the future. And maybe that's the road they'll take, because you don't want to shut people out of this. And if you have a room solution with sensors around it and an Oculus Rift or whatever, it should work fine, right? I mean, it's not going to be as portable. You can't bring it from room to room.
Right. I think it goes more back to the requirements, because you got to remember, all these devices are set up without sensors. Both Oculus and HTC have external sensors. So you've got to add all that support in.
Right, right. So it makes sense that it would be in the first release. But it seems like it's something they could do just to be more inclusive.
Sure. Mary Jo, how do you feel about VR? Are you going to get one and hook it up to your Xbox?
No. No. But I thought it was interesting they announced the availability of the two headsets for pre-order today. Acer and HP both have headsets, right? And, you know, I was surprised. That didn't get any applause in the room, which I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, Terry said something along the lines of, you know, mixed reality is the next personal computing paradigm or something to that effect. And I tweeted this, and I'll just say it. You know, no, it isn't. And the funny thing is, even Microsoft knows that. I had a briefing with Microsoft ahead of CES, and they were saying, look, you know, this is a slow boil thing. This is not the next big thing. The next big thing almost certainly is this voice-activated smart speaker stuff, this ambient computing. The notion that you can walk into any room in your house and talk and have things happen. And you're going to have that in your car. You're going to have it in your home. You obviously have it in your phone for when you're out in the world. You'll have it in your computer. And that's, you know, Microsoft's playing in that market too. They have Cortana and they're working on that. But that's a much bigger deal, I think, than mixed reality. Than anything where you have to lock your face into an alien face hugger thing.
What did you guys think of those things? What were they called? Controllers.
Well, they look like Oculus or
the Vive. They look very similar.
Very standard, yeah. There, you know, there, since this was beaten to death in the pre-brief, we should mention that there's a $400 bundle that Acer is offering that includes the a controller, I think it is. Or do you need two? Maybe it's two.
It's got to be two.
It's probably two. So you get the headset and the two controllers for $400. And I think as of today, you can pre-order these devices, the ones that are available to developers. They are the shipping hardware. And so if you buy them today, you will have the devices that these companies, Acer and HP, will be selling in the fall. What you don't have, and they never said this, I was really confused by this, what you don't have is the software, right? So that software could be everything from literally the 3D environment that you need to just kind of interact with it to applications and utilities and things. This is something you're going to want to look into. If you're interested in this, read the fine print, because these things are aimed at developers. They want developers to write mixed reality applications that will run in this environment. It's very possible that none of the end user software is actually in there. It's similar to when you bought like a Kinect for Windows back in the day. You could connect it to your computer, but there was nothing there. There was not even a single, you know, cute little demo app to run. And it's possible that this is the same thing.
Do you think those controllers are going to ship with Scorpio? I saw people guessing that.
I don't think so. I don't see that. The only reason I hesitate with that is that Microsoft, with the Scorpio, is very scared of saying this is anything other than a gaming platform. Now, granted, these are probably games, and there's probably going to be some VR component, but I see this as more of a bolt-on, saying, okay, you bought the console, it's the greatest thing ever.
And right. In other words, these things will be available for Scorpio. That I do expect. By the way, Microsoft's never said that, but they're creating this mixed reality VR platform. They're creating a console that runs Windows. I mean, why wouldn't it be? And so I think what they will do, my guess, is they will sell you the console. It's going to be really expensive anyway. What are you going to add $300 to $400 to the price of the console?
I know, right.
And if you want this stuff, you'll be able to buy it, and you'll be able to choose which one you buy. Because it's not just Acer and HP. We know there are several other companies, and there'll be more still. That's my expectation.
Yeah. Now, how about we talk about things that did not get talked about here that we were surprised did not get talked about? Windows 10 on ARM.
Yeah, no kidding.
Not at all.
I was surprised. I really thought that was going to be something in the keynote today.
All right, so Monday morning quarterbacking it. I'll do the same thing. I'll cosplay Microsoft PR, and this is my retroactive response to that. They don't have to talk about it. Your apps are all going to work. I bet that's how they would describe it, right? You know, we had speculated that maybe they would give out devices to people, prototype devices, that would allow developers to write directly to these ARM devices and see how those things ran. It's possible that they're so confident in the performance of Windows on ARM that they don't need it, or it's just possible it's so far out they're just not ready.
But it's supposed to be devices out this holiday, right? So who's going to be... Who's writing apps that they're testing with these things? Like, are they just going to say, don't worry, you don't need to test them because it's just a compiled version?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'm wondering. I mean, you know, if you were to write an app today to the store, a UWP app, I mean, does everyone test it on, here's what it runs like on a Celeron, here's what it runs like on an i5, here's what it runs like on a gaming PC with dedicated graphics. I mean, I'm sure some developers do that, but I bet a lot of the smaller guys don't. And, you know, the one thing we do know about that announcement, because we were told this, is that the guys who set that demo up that they showed in China, someone had said, well, let's just get Photoshop running and we'll show it. And he said, no, I want people to see it load because that's a key part of the performance. We could show that people know that's a huge application. Mm-hmm. Let's let them see it boot up and they'll see the performance.
Yeah. Another thing, I don't think it was uttered even once. The word continuum.
That's true.
Yeah, that's really disappointing because Microsoft had somewhat of a lead here. Yeah. They had continuum. And they had, granted, we all know the story behind their phones, but they still could have said, look, continuum's still evolving. We're not giving up on it. They've got good competitors now from Samsung. And Microsoft, if they truly are not working behind the scenes and just not telling us, that's one thing. But if they're truly not building anything out, I think that's a real big mistake on their part. Mm. I have to think that they're doing it.
So, yeah, my guess is they are, in fact, improving Continuum in Windows 10 for this update. maybe the, and again, I keep doing this, I'm just going to play that role again because you have to just speculate. But I bet what they want to do is introduce it at a future event where they're introducing a Surface device. You know, and that that's maybe, yeah, maybe that's the logical time to talk about it.
Well, if that is the case, we keep hearing no new Surface phone type device till next year. So,
well, okay, so I'm sorry. Continuum is two different things in a way. There's
there's a
phone continuum, and then there's the continuum you get on these devices like we have here, and, PCs. Yeah. And so, I can't even imagine how what the point of or how they would improve it per se, but because it's perfect. but I suspect they are in fact improving continuum on PCs specifically. And by the way, we talk about this kind of notion of a Surface Mobile or some kind of new hybrid device that is not quite a phone. That would require some new form of continuum, certainly, or some enhancement of an existing form of continuum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you'd want to talk about that with the device. You don't want to show off something and say,
It
would be goofy to show off functionality. We don't have a device to announce, but here's what it might look like if we did. They can't really do that.
It's true. I just thought they might talk more about it because when we heard early leaks about Redstone 3, a lot of those leaks were about improvements to the mobile experience of Windows 10, right? And we didn't really hear anything about that. In fact, the theme of today's keynote was Windows will make your life better if you're an iOS or an Android user. So
I know. I had a purposely cynical tweet about that where it's like, it's interesting to me that so many of these great new Windows 10 features are for iOS and Android.
I know.
And, not directly for Windows. But look, that's the whole thing I talked to Frank about.
I know.
This new worldview is so pragmatic and so smart. And I know there are still Microsoft guys out there that are really bothered by this stuff. But this is the world. We all have whatever phones we have. We use whatever devices we use. We happen to be in the Windows sphere, but a lot of people are too. But most of the time, it's just on a computer. And so you just have to kind of accept that this is the world. Microsoft can't change it.
One of the other things that we did not see that I was hoping to hear, Redstone 3, absolutely nothing for business users at this event.
I know.
And so I did ask Microsoft and said, hey, you guys did this last time. You announced the Creators Update, and then you hastily put together some enterprise features like a month later after we kind of raised a ruckus saying, hey, why would you ever install this? They did tell me there are more features coming for those users, but they would not tell me anything about it. And so if you're on that pipeline, there is something coming for you, but we don't quite know what it is or when it will arrive.
I mean, they did one Windows Phone, little thing, and they got a couple of woos out in the audience.
I know. It was like...
I think there was two woos and one clap.
It was not a good showing. This just reflects the world we live in. It's not meant to be insulting. It's not meant to be funny.
No.
I mean, it was hilarious. But it was... It's just the way the world is.
Yep. Trust me, they would like it to be the inverse, by all accounts.
Of course they would. Yeah, absolutely. I would like it to be the inverse as well.
I'd like you to be the inverse, but that's where we're at in life.
And on that note...
Clippy, get the knife out.
As the podcast becomes a live version of Twitter. what do you think?
I think we've exhausted our topics.
Is Megan asleep?
I'm not asleep. I'm listening.
I'm so sorry.
She's just updating her LinkedIn page. That's all.
That's all.
Like, you guys
You'll
were speaking
emails.
About career nadirs. Megan's was also today, Brad.
You guys ought to be nicer to each other.
They should. That's why I have to sit between them at any event. That just is... the thing.
She's joking, but not really.
My best relationships are always antagonistic. I kind of thrive in this environment.
So, is anyone going to China next week?
No.
So we were told not to bother. So we have an idea of what's going to happen that we obviously can't discuss too much. But, that's about the end of that story.
It should be a smaller event rather than a major event.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I am looking forward to it. And I will be hosting again next week. Leo will not be here. So
nice.
Is the announcement before Wednesday or will it be after Wednesday?
It's a week later.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we can surmise. I can see if I can poke you until you tell me all your secrets from your sources.
Yep.
Brad Sams, Mary Jo Foley, Paul Thurrott, thank you so much for joining
us.
Thank you. Is there anything else that you guys are working on that we need to know about before we go?
Just a formal apology to you for this. And
that's what you're working on, the formal apology?
I don't know, flowers or chocolates, I'm not sure which is better.
That sounds good.
Oh, if you're listening right now, our meetup for Windows Weekly is tonight. It's 5:30 to 7:30 at Pike Brewing down at the market in Seattle. So if you're listening, come down. We'll be there.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And we will check in next week on Windows Weekly and talk more about these topics and all the things in between. Thanks so much for joining us. And thank you for joining us. Windows Weekly usually records Wednesday at 11 a.m. Leo Laporte will host 2 weeks from now. Well, they'll talk about the China announcements, but you'll get me again next week. And you can, of course, subscribe to the show, and please do. That's twit.tv/WW. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.